Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Today is February the 5th. A shout out to the military men and women serving our country. We thank you for your services. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the programs available on prn.fm, on the Internet, and pcradioshow.org. To listen to the live program on the telephone each Wednesday, it is on at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the number is 641-793-7091. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. In the news, impact of the coronavirus on consumer electronics, cord cutting and the cable companies, and Avast has been selling the browser history of its users. Feature segments this evening is the IT Pro Series, Corporation Disposal of Old Equipment. From the Tech Corner, How Safe is 5G? And All Hands on Tech, Autonomous Auto Tech Beyond the Car. We've been hit by the coronavirus, which has impacted adversely the manufacturing of consumer electronics. Public health experts around the globe are scrambling to understand, track, and contain a new virus that appeared in Wuhan, China, at the start of the year. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are confirmed cases in 26 countries or territories, in addition to China and Hong Kong, including Germany, Australia, Japan, Vietnam, Russia, the United Kingdom, and United States. The reporting of the numbers of people dying and the number of people affected grows exponentially each day. It is unknown when it will be under control and what the impact will be on the economy. More than 50 global companies, including Apple, Nintendo, and Dell, are rushing to pull production out of China amid the country's trade war with the United States. Apple is considering moving 15% to 30% of its iPhone production out of the country. The virus was first detected in the Chinese city of Wuhan late last year. According to the China's National Health Commission, the virus known as 2019 nCoV was reported to the World Health Organization on December the 31st and has been under investigation since. Chinese scientists have linked the disease to a family of viruses known as coronaviruses, which include the deadly SARS and the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. The virus since has spread to Europe, Australia, and the United States, and scientists have yet to fully understand the destructive potential of the new virus. Researchers and investigators are just beginning to figure out how it transmitted and how far it has spread. Tim Cook says Apple could see some impact from coronavirus in China. Apple has suppliers in the Wuhan area of China and has taken precautions like closing one store in China and reducing hours at other retail locations. Apple is taking extra precautions in China because of the coronavirus sweeping the country. Not even Apple is immune to the coronavirus sweeping the globe, with supplies and stores impacted by the deadly disease. The company just posted quarterly revenues of $91.8 billion, an increase of 9% from the year-ago quarter, an all-time record, and quarterly earnings per diluted share of almost $5, up 19%, also an all-time record. International sales accounted for 61% of the quarter's revenue. CEO Tim Cook said the company has suppliers in China's Wuhan region, where the coronavirus first emerged. The iPhone maker has alternative sources for those components, and it's working on migration plans to make up any expected production loss. What's less clear is how the coronavirus will impact suppliers in other parts of China. The Chinese government extended the New Year holiday break from the end of January to February 10th, which will delay the startup of Apple supplier factories. As of last week, Apple had limited employee travel to affected areas to business-critical situations. Apple also closed a store in China because a number of its retail partners have also closed their locations. Many of the stores that remain open have also reduced operating hours. The company is taking extra precautions for its staff and customers. It's deep cleaning its stores frequently and conducting temperature checks of retail workers to make sure they remain healthy. Retail traffic has been impacted outside of this area across the country in the last few days. Now, Apple, with deep pockets, can ride out the downturn in revenue due to the coronavirus. But many smaller companies and newly startup companies have been relying on China to provide products at lower cost. Most of today's consumer electronics are produced in China. A slowdown in production in China could mean a shortage of iPhones and other Apple devices across the globe. Marty Winston has more to say about this domino effect.
Chinese New Year always begins a two-week interruption to manufacturing and shipping as workers travel that huge country to visit relatives, but it's longer this year. The coronavirus led to workers being confined to their homes and factories not being allowed to open or operate for at least 10 extra days. And there's no telling how many times that may be extended. What's the impact of that here? What's the impact on you? As a consumer, you may be inconvenienced. As a company, you may be crippled, and truth be told, this may be consequential enough to drive several U.S. companies out of business. As a worker, you may be laid off, even if you work for a company that stays in business. Want to know the how and why of that? Earlier, when hearing about approaches to retrofitting homes, you may recall the term chain of consequence, or you may be more comfortable thinking in terms of causality. But to keep it simple, let's just connect the dots. But the first dot is a lot of you. Here's an example. What would you do if your car's brakes were getting soft and maybe failing? You'll find a brake shop or a mechanic who can figure out what's wrong and what parts need replacing, just like a lot of consumer electronics and business computers and so many other product categories. Most brake parts are made in China. So, your mechanic calls the parts shop or the parts distributor. What are the chances your parts will be in stock? Normally, it's a pretty sure bet, but if those places that stock spare parts have been in business for a couple of years or longer, well, they know that every year they have to order a little extra to arrive before the Chinese New Year break, because it will be 2 to 3 weeks before the factories are up and running again, and another 5 to 8 weeks before the cargo ships can reach U.S. ports and clear customs. They'll order enough to bridge that gap. And American businesses are very clever about ordering. It costs money to buy what they keep in stock, on hand, in their inventories. And it doesn't earn any money until orders come in for it all. Sure, it's classic supply and demand, but there's a modern business principle called JIT, for just in time. They sharpen their pencils, analyze past demands, forecast exactly what they need to have on hand before that new inventory arrives, and order only as little as possible to cover that. So what happens when demand keeps going but supplies get cut off? You know what happens. They run out. You can't get the thing you need. As a consumer, you either do without for now and wait, or you find an alternative. In our example of parts for your car's brakes, what are your choices? Your mechanic may be able to find used or reconditioned parts, or may go hunting for parts in a junkyard. You may have to find other ways to get where you want to go, like rides from friends or carpooling or public transportation or Uber, or maybe somebody can find compatible parts made in some other part of the world. They'll almost certainly cost more and probably take a little time to get delivered, but that might work. It's not just parts for brakes. It's everything that's made in China, almost everything electronic, a lot of clothing, hardware, tools. A lot of what's used to build houses and office buildings. And this year, because of that extra delay, 10 days so far, but more extensions could be coming, a lot of those products will run out ordered, back-ordered, but just not available. As a consumer, you may think, well, that's inconvenient, but it's no big deal. Well, don't forget that chain of consequence. For stores, when they run out of things to sell, their sales drop. They make less money, and they may have to cut labor costs. That's also true for the warehouses that stock those goods. There's less shipping and less receiving. So trucking and railroads and package delivery services get hurt. And U.S.-based brands that sell Chinese-manufactured goods are in the same boat. If they can't deliver, they can't bill out, and their incoming money takes a huge hit. Without that money, they can't pay their bills. Some may resort to cutting payroll hours or payroll positions. Some, especially those without cash reserves, may have to shut down. And that's just about half of it. The other half is that companies that sell to China, selling products made here or anywhere other than China, well, those companies face an extended shutdown of those Chinese businesses that have been their customers. That means some period, at least a third of a month, maybe longer, when orders and reorders aren't being issued. For some, that means shutting down factories here or elsewhere in the world other than China, shutting down other manufacturing or processing facilities, cutting worker hours. It might possibly mean furloughs or layoffs. And the timing for those families is unfortunate. They're just now facing the credit card bills for their Christmas spending. If they pay late, it will hurt their credit, cost them more in interest, and possibly in late fees. And that's in the face of very likely needing to pay temporarily higher prices for everyday needs. For many of them, it will mean a dramatic change in plans for how they'll spend their income tax refunds. Plans that strictly local businesses like restaurants and florists depend on to recover from the usual February slumps. So, beyond the very serious health concerns, the coronavirus crisis in China is already having an economic impact here and across most of the rest of the world. It will be at least disruptive for consumers and may inflate how much you need to spend for normal things. It is impacting business categories across the board. It is likely to disrupt employment and the workforce. Any new extensions to the shutdown will make everything worse, including the death and suffering that so many Chinese families must now endure. We offer them our hopes and prayers, and we wish and hope for an early medical breakthrough to end their horrors.
For you brave souls out there that still subscribe to TV service and who haven't cut the cord yet, I'm afraid there's more bad news in store for you at this point. Let's take the case of Charter or Spectrum. They lost 145,000 TV subscribers in the first quarter of last year, 141,000 subscribers in the second quarter, 77,000 TV subscribers lost in the third quarter, and in the last quarter, 101,000 TV subscribers for a total of 464,000 TV subscribers for the year 2019. As the cord cutting continues in the United States, in other words, Charter Spectrum lost a little bit under 500,000 subscribers. That's quite healthy. By the way, when I said healthy, I mean that's a big number, not that it's good. Well, maybe it's good. Overall, AT&T lost nearly 1.2 million subscribers in the fourth quarter after losing 2.9 million in the first three quarters of 2019, bringing their total losses for the year to nearly 4.1 million and bringing the firm's total number of video subscribers to 20.4 million at the end of 2019. That's a huge loss. In other words, they had almost 25 million subscribers and they lost 4.1 million of them. Verizon lost 55,000 pay TV subscribers in the first quarter. They lost 52,000 pay TV subscribers in the second quarter, 67,000 pay TV subscribers in the third quarter, and 51,000 pay TV subscribers because they've been promoting mobile subs and they get the Disney Plus boost. So for all of 2019, Verizon lost 225,000 Fios video subscribers. And that's one reason why if you try to get Fios service, you're just not getting it because with all this cord cutting, they're not going to put any additional money into it because of the ongoing shift from traditional linear video to over-the-top offerings. Fios, which competes with cable and satellite TV services, ended 2019 with 4.15 million total video subscribers. So their loss of 225,000 and their current base now is 4.15 million, that's quite substantial. And the big guy, Comcast, they lost 122,000 TV subscribers in the first quarter of last year, 224,000 TV subscribers in the second quarter, 238,000 TV subscribers in the third quarter, and 149,000 TV subscribers in the fourth quarter. That's a total loss of 733,000 TV subscribers last year, or 3.3% of their total subscriber base. And they are projecting a loss of just under 1 million TV subscribers will be lost in the year 2020. So you're going to ask, where are these subscribers going? They're getting streaming service. And that's how they are cutting the cord. In other words, they're going to these companies for the internet, and they're getting streaming services from Disney Plus, Hulu, Netflix, and you can go on with a whole bunch of other streaming services. Is that good or bad for these companies? Actually, these companies are also saying their profit has gone up because of all these losses. Why? Well, the broadband business once again had led the growth in fourth quarter as Charter recorded 313,000 internet subscribers net additions and 26,000 net internet business customers for a total of 339,000 internet customers, up 329,000 from a year ago. The company also added 288,000 mobile lines in the quarter, bringing its growing mobile business to a total of 1.1 million lines. In other words, they make more money just selling internet service. Charter highlighted that as of the end of last year, it had more than 29.2 million total customers, and having added more than 1.1 new customers, but basically for internet service. For 2020, the management forecasts weaker video subscription momentum, but increase in internet-only subscription. So, all these numbers, why does it matter? On a macro level, cord cutting is moving from something a few people are doing just recently as 1 or 2 years ago to something a lot of people are now doing, which matters a lot for AT&T since a sizable portion of their subscriber base signed up to take advantage of deep discounts that they were offering. Comcast went on to warn that TV prices are expected to increase in 2020. Of course, where else could you get TV service other than streaming service? And if you want full cable service, they are all franchised under municipal agreement, so you only have one, two, or at best, three choices of vendors to choose from. Comcast has raised TV prices already in 2020, just a few months after announcing the last round of price hikes. For now, Comcast has not said when or how much prices will increase, but Comcast has confirmed it will happen again in 2020. This all comes as Comcast just raised their price back in December, with customers seeing the increase hit their bills in January. Comcast was not alone. DirecTV, Optimum, Spectrum, and more have raised their prices over the last few months. Not only is Comcast planning more TV price hikes, but it's looking at raising the cost of modem rentals. Some reports have said the cost for internet with modem, Wi-Fi, and unlimited data will soon cost even more on top of your internet bill. Comcast already charges $14 a month for modem rentals in many markets after the most recent price hike on Comcast internet customers. Customers aren't just going to get hit with increase in their TV service either. Comcast is changing the business model in response to the rise of streaming with the imminent launch in July of its new Peacock streaming service. As was recently noted, Comcast's most recent earnings announcement, Comcast insists that these price increases are a necessary byproduct of shifting the emphasis of the business, which continues to shed customers at a faster pace than analysts expected to streaming. With the rate adjustments that are being implemented in 2020, as well as the ongoing changes in customer behavior, we can expect higher video subscriber losses. At one time, subscribers were attracted to how many channels were available on cable television. The cable operators were paying figuratively pennies for content that appealed to a limited audience, such shows as college games, the golf channel, cooking channels, and other subjects served a relatively small audience. The major channels offering mainstream content such as professional sports, 24-hour news, and programs produced by national network stations started to demand being paid an ever-increasing amount as cable television channels outnumbered over-the-top television channels. Over time, the monthly cost climbed to a tipping point. The majority of the subscriber audience was just viewing 10 to 12 channels, and the rising cost of television and internet service started to become onerous. As the annual cost ranged from $2,000 to $3,000 a year, it becomes a significant expense on the budget. The television audience of today has transitioned from viewing scheduled programs to watching programs on demand. Streaming has fast become the new norm for television viewing. With selective streaming, many of the programs with relatively small audience are not financially able to continue to operate and they become a scheduling casualty. Cord cutting with streaming television will rapidly replace scheduled programming. What the cable companies feared in loss of revenue is no longer the case. They have greater profits by offering less. The ground is shifting underneath its feet. Customers are fleeing in droves, but the cable companies will still get paid because the house, as they say, always wins. An Avast antivirus subsidiary sells every search, every click, every buy on every site. Its clients have included Home Depot, Google, Microsoft, Pepsi, and McKinsey. An antivirus program used by hundreds of millions of people around the world is selling highly sensitive web browsing data to many of the world's biggest companies. The sale of this data is both highly sensitive and is in many cases supposed to remain confidential between the company selling the data and the clients purchasing it. A subsidiary of antivirus giant Avast called Jumpshot shine new light on the secretive sale and supply chain of people's internet browsing histories. They show that the Avast antivirus program installed on a person's computer collects data and that Jumpshot repackages it into various different products that are then sold to many of the largest companies in the world. Some past, present, and potential clients include Google, Yelp, Microsoft, McKinsey, Pepsi, Home Depot, Condé Nast, Intuit, and many others. Some clients paid millions of dollars for products that include so-called all-clicks feed, which can track user behavior, clicks, and movement across websites in highly precise detail. Avast claims to have more than 435 million active users per month, and Jumpshot says it has data from 100 million devices. Avast collects data from users that opt in and then provides that to Jumpshot, but multiple Avast users said they were not aware that Avast sold browsing data, raising questions about how informed that consent is. The data includes Google searches, lookup of locations and GPS coordinates on Google Maps. It is possible to determine from the collected data the anonymized user visited. Although the data does not include personal information, such as user's name, it still contains a wealth of specific browsing data. In a press release from July, Jumpshot claims to be the only company that unlocks walled garden data and seeks to provide marketers with deeper visibility into the entire online customer journey. Jumpshot has previously discussed some of its clients publicly, but other companies mentioned in Jumpshot documents include Expedia, IBM, Intuit, which makes TurboTax, L'Oreal, and Home Depot. Employees are instructed not to talk publicly about Jumpshot's relationship with these companies. It's very granular and it's great data for these companies because it's down to the device level with the timestamp. Until recently, Avast was collecting the browsing data of its customers who had installed the company's browser plugin, which is designed to warn users of suspicious websites. Browser makers Mozilla, Opera, and Google remove Avast and subsidiary AVG's extensions from their respective browser extension stores. Avast has since stopped sending browsing data collected by these extensions to Jumpshot. However, the data collection is ongoing. The source and documents indicate that instead of harvesting information through software attached to the browser, Avast is doing it through the antivirus software itself. Last week, months after it was spotted using its browser extension to send data to Jumpshot, Avast began asking its existing free antivirus consumers to opt in to data collection. If they opt in, that device becomes part of the Jumpshot panel and all browser-based internet activity will be reported to Jumpshot. What URLs did these devices visit, in what order, and when? It adds, summarizing what questions the product may be able to answer. Avast has ended some of its most troubling practices. However, Avast has not yet committed to deleting user data that was collected and shared without the opt-in consent of its users or to end the sale of sensitive internet browser data. Despite Avast currently asking users to opt back into the data collection via pop-up in the antivirus software, multiple Avast users said they did not know that Avast was selling browsing data. In contact with over two dozen companies mentioned in the internal documents, only a handful responded to questions asking what they do with the data based on the browsing history of Avast users. A Home Depot spokesperson wrote in an email statement, "We sometimes use information from third-party providers to help improve our business, products, and services. We require these providers to have the appropriate rights to share this information with us. In this case, we receive anonymized audience data, which cannot be used to identify individual customers." Microsoft declined to comment. A Yelp spokesperson responded by saying that in 2018, as part of a request for information by antitrust authorities, Yelp's policy team was asked to estimate the impact of Google's anti-competitive behavior on the local search marketplace. Jumpshot was engaged on a one-time basis to generate a report of anonymized high-level trend data, which validated other estimates of Google's siphoning of traffic. Southwest Airlines said it had discussions with Jumpshot, but didn't reach an agreement with the company. IBM said it did not have a record of being a client, and Altria said it is not working with Jumpshot, although it didn't specify if it did so previously. On its website and press releases, Jumpshot names Pepsi and consulting giants Bain & Company and McKinsey as clients, as well as Expedia, Intuit, L'Oreal, and other companies which are not already mentioned in public. Jumpshot sells a variety of different products based on data collected by Avast antitrust software installed on users' computers. Clients in the institutional finance sector often buy a feed of the top 10,000 domains that Avast users are visiting to try and spot trends. Another Jumpshot product is the company's so-called all-click feeds. It allows a client to buy information on all the clicks Jumpshot has seen on a particular domain, like Amazon, Walmart, Target, Best Buy, and eBay. Avast announced it will stop the Jumpshot data collection and wind down Jumpshot's operation with immediate effect. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with Corporation Disposal of Old Computers.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now I'm going to talk to you about the business world and IT. I'm going to give you some experience from my current and past of being a 30-year IT professional. Now, I'm going to take you on a journey south of the border. I spent a good portion of my life living in Southern California, and my church went on a regular basis to an orphanage. We supported this orphanage down in a city called La Mission. It's just south of Rosarito. It's about halfway in between Rosarito Beach and Ensenada. And this was a regular journey that we did about 3 to 4 times a year. And I enjoyed driving on down. I enjoyed the wonderful, authentic Mexican food, something that currently I struggle to find because I'm not in Southern California. I am in the Midwest. And it's unfortunate. I miss myself some carne asada. I miss myself some enchiladas, some really good stuff. And it's fine. I do get it when I visit into Southern California on a regular basis. But I was down south of the border at the orphanage, and I had arrived, and they said, "Hey, we've got some new computers in here, and we want you to look at these. We want you to give us a little bit of help with the networking of these." I go into this particular room where they've set up 10 computers, and I look at these. And I, from afar, and I'm going, "Oh, that's the same computers we had at this one company that I worked for that actually, at that point, they were famous for having gone out of business. They were one of the big, huge companies in the big, huge real estate fall apart in the about 2007, 2008. If you recall that time period, yes, I worked for one of the biggest companies in that whole entire mess." And I said, that's very interesting. As I moved closer, I found out these still have the property tags on them. So these were returned. The company I worked for, they went out of business. These were returned to the leasing company. And the leasing company, they had 6,000 computers they had to figure out what to do with. So they wound up donating 10 of these to this orphanage. And that was great. That was amazing. And that is just one of the things that corporations do when they get new machines or they go out of business. So some companies, they do donate them. They buy computers, and after a certain point, they'll donate them to an orphanage or some other place like Goodwill. And another thing that they also do is they'll sell them off. I know one particular company that they lease their computer systems, and when they get to the end of the lease, there's a fair market value that's involved with that. And that fair market value is, well, it's actually kind of a nice price point. So what happens is these companies will often offer to their employees, you can have the system you've had for the last 3 to 5 years. You can take that home. You can keep that. We're going to scrub certain bits and pieces of information off of there, but you can own that system for the exact cost of the buyout of the lease. A matter of that $1,500 Apple MacBook, that's available to you for $400. Okay, current value is $500, $600, but that's still a savings. And that's actually a very exciting thing. There is some energy involved with wiping off the personal data. But in a smaller corporation, sometimes they'll say, look, we trust you. You're going to be responsible yourself to back up all of your data from your system to your work, to your new system. But that's fine. Another thing that happens with these is when they go off lease, again, fair market value lease, what they'll do is they'll return those systems to the leasing company, who then turns around and sells them. So you can actually buy computers, off lease computers, online. You're not going to get the $400 deal that I just mentioned, but you might pay $500, $600 for something that is, yeah, It's a little bit older. It's 3 years or so older, but it has all of the operating system. It has, usually they've refurbished these things. They've gone through, they've checked them out. They've made sure that it's in near new condition. If it's something that's beat up, it's something that's got all kinds of scratches on it, you're not going to pay as much, or they may not even offer it. There was one company, I went and I looked online to find some off-lease computers, and they had, it was actually very funny. I looked at it very oddly because the different levels that they had for quality were as follows: mint, very good, good, fair, and Stallone. Stallone. Oh, Sylvester Stallone, as in may show a bunch of scratches. It may show some visible signs of use, notably scratches that can be felt and so forth and so on. I'm like, yeah, that describes Sylvester Stallone pretty good, doesn't it? So it's up to you. You know, it's one of those situations that even Apple has gotten in on the game. You can buy some refurbished systems from Apple through Apple, and they offer a discount over the new price. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of a suggestion. This is me personally. I wouldn't buy one of the refurbished ones from Apple, even though they go through, they give you the full warranty, and there's all kinds of, it's perfect condition. The issue to me is you're getting something that's 3 years old, but you're only getting a matter of $100 or $200 off. You're better off if you're going to spend that much money. You know, you're getting it half of the, you know, half of the price. You're getting it down at a nice low price. Great. But if you're only saving 10, 20%, yeah, go for the new system. Go for something that's absolutely great. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Harvey, who is a longtime listener of the Personal Computer Show, asked, is 5G safe? He writes the following. TV ads announced this advance as the newest communications technology. As a consumer, I have no reason not to accept what I hear and see without question and look forward to its use on my cell phone. But should I think otherwise? On this very PRN.FM streaming station, I listen to guests on Gary Noh's Tuesday commentary hour on his weekly Gary Noh Show that report in-depth investigation to the perils of 5G radiation danger and even a comment by a lineman in training. We appreciate your comments. Harvey, first, we thank you for your listening support. From all evidence available so far, there has been no reported adverse short or long-term health effects that have been shown to occur from the RF signals produced by base stations. However, nothing is absolute. There has not been a formal study and review of 5G covering the lowest level to the highest level of the spectrum with different data traffic patterns. There are, however, articles which are at best about anecdotal adverse effects. At the present time, I have no great concerns with the impact of health with 5G technology, but I remain to continue to be alert to the issue of what levels of 5G technology which may be harmful to human health. The 5G spectrum includes all type of spectrum, including low-band and mid-band spectrum of 1G through 4G LTE frequencies, as well as the new high-band spectrum, also known as millimeter wavelength 5G spectrum, which includes 28 and 39 gigahertz millimeter wave bands. The 5G spectrum will span the widest across the radio spectrum than any generation of cellular technology. Future 5G networks will transmit data through targeted beams and advanced signal processing that could speed up data rates and boost bandwidth. How 5G works? Like other cellular networks, 5G networks use a system of cell sites that divide the territory into sectors and sends encoded data through radio waves. Each cell site must be connected to a network backbone, whether through a wired or wireless backhaul connection. 5G operates in a high-frequency band of the wireless spectrum. Because high-frequency waves have a harder time traveling over distance and through objects, the 5G network will be built on small cell site technology with antennas as close as 500 feet apart. 5G is expected to have a much higher speed and capacity and much lower latency than 4G. Because 5G can send and receive signals pretty much instantaneously, it is expected that 5G will offer mobile internet speeds of more than 10 gigabits per second. That is approximately 100 times faster than 4G. The latency will be less than a millisecond with 5G, which means theoretically you could download a feature-length movie in high-def mode in less than a few seconds. The shorter wavelength means 5G can carry a lot of data much faster than 4G, but it also means a much shorter range. 4G wavelength have a range of about 10 miles. 5G wavelength at the highest frequencies have a range of, at best, 1,000 feet. The trade-off for speed at millimeter wave frequencies is limited range. Testing a 5G service range in millimeter wave has produced results approximately 500 meters, which is about 1,500 feet from the tower, meaning a huge propagation of antenna arrays would be required for pure standalone 5G deployment. This translates into 6 New York City blocks. Can you just imagine every 6 blocks there is a cellular tower? So what is being implemented is really low-band 5G. So for practical reason, what is being implemented is low-band 5G. In addition, the inability of millimeter wave signals to penetrate obstructions further limits the range potential because these obstructions would need to be factored into network designs for mobile users. The range constraints have motivated a trend towards more flexible architecture in 5G with the decomposition of the base station into new logical elements. These facilitate the network to be deployed flexibly using the available real estate with local aggregation of some functions with minimal space footprint and other requirements needed for radio sites where this is limited. Now, in a city environment, this is what is probably will be proposed. But in suburban and rural environments, this is not practical. With these range concerns in mind, anchoring with low-band 5G may remain a component of 5G networks for the foreseeable future, with only users close to the antenna reaping the full benefits. That is the current hype for cellular technology. But let's be practical. I cannot imagine there will be a cell tower every 1,000 feet to enable cell phones to transmit at 10 gigabits per second. The introduction of 5G will have little impact on Wi-Fi. The two will likely coexist as 4G and Wi-Fi do now. Although there is overlap, the use cases for Wi-Fi and 5G remain independent. It is even likely that Wi-Fi will play a key role in many 5G developments. There are billions of existing and forthcoming Wi-Fi-only devices on the market, such as tablets, entertainment systems, and computer peripherals. They're not going to disappear anytime soon. Wi-Fi-specific functions aren't compatible with cellular networks. Let me repeat that again. Wi-Fi-specific functions aren't compatible with cellular networks. 5G doesn't allow access to private servers, appliances, or other LAN devices, unless they are cloud-connected via the Internet. For networks that have an infrastructure like this, Wi-Fi is and will continue to remain the best option. Wi-Fi is simply too prevalent and successful, especially within corporate environments. Organizations with a corporate wireless LAN can monitor and secure their networks and user access to ensure data security. 5G-connected devices, however, cannot offer this level of scrutiny. The introduction of 5G will have little impact on Wi-Fi, and the two will likely coexist as 4G and Wi-Fi do now. Although 5G may improve our day-to-day lives, some consumers have voiced concerns about potential health hazards. Many of these concerns are over 5G's use of the higher energy millimeter wave radiation. It's ionizing radiation that's dangerous because it can break chemical bonds. The World Health Organization has issued the following statement. Recent surveys have indicated that RF exposure from base stations and wireless technologies in publicly accessible areas, including schools and hospitals, are normally thousands of times below international standards. From all evidence accumulated so far, no adverse short- or long-term health effects have been shown to occur from the RF signals produced by base stations. And in the United States, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued the following. Based on our ongoing evaluation of this issue, the totality of the available scientific evidence continues to not support adverse health effects in humans caused by exposures at or under the current radio frequency energy exposure limits. Future 5G networks will transmit data through targeted beams and advanced signal processing that could speed up data rates and boost bandwidth. Today, mobile users want faster data speeds and more reliable service. The next generation of wireless networks, 5G, promises to deliver that and much more. As the number of mobile users and the demand for data rises, 5G must handle far more traffic at much higher speeds than base stations that make up today's cellular networks. Beamforming, that's B-E-A-M forming, is one of the burgeoning technologies that will help us get there. Beamforming is a traffic signaling system for cellular base stations that identifies the most efficient data delivery route to a particular user, and it reduces interference for nearby users in the process. Depending on the technology that's implemented, there are several ways to implement it in 5G networks. For millimeter waves, which are high-frequency waves expected to play a key role in 5G networks, beamforming is primarily used to address a different set of problems. Cellular signals are easily blocked by objects and tend to weaken over long distances. In this case, beamforming can help by focusing a signal in a concentrated beam that points only in the direction of a user, rather than broadcasting in many directions at once. With beamforming and other 5G technologies, engineers hope to build a wireless network that future smartphone users, gamers, and autonomous cars will rely on every day. Presenting Marty Winston on Autonomous Auto Tech Beyond the Car.
Imagine it's your job to design a self-driving car. Or even better, imagine you're the computer, the intelligence driving that car. What do you need to know, and how will you come to know it? Okay, you need to know about all the cars and people and so on that are in your immediate surroundings, their position, their speed, their heading, and your own. You may not know how all of the sensors work that detect all that, but you might at least want to know their names, not that any one car will use them all. There's radar, and the latest version of radar called LiDAR that uses whiskers of laser light to scan. And ultrasonics, which are good for measuring distances, like those backup alerts when you're about to hit a wall or run over a tricycle. Video is also useful, especially with some AI to help interpret what it sees. That's some cool tech. And having it in all those cars mean they'll be building a lot of it. Kind of makes you wonder where else it might prove useful. Build into traffic lights. It could keep track of both vehicles and pedestrians and adapt the timing of those lights to be safer and more convenient for everyone. They could also watch for accidents and immediately notify first responders. Built into parking garages. That tech could interact with the tech in self-driving cars to let them park themselves and do it in a way that fits more of them by packing them more tightly, since they shouldn't have to allow room for the doors to open, as long as the cars are confirmed as empty. That can also help prevent those garage fender benders. Put the tech to work in a supermarket, and it can monitor checkout lines for how many people are lined up, how many items are on the belt, and more or less how full the waiting carts might be. The result could be lights above the lines to help direct shoppers to those lines that appear to offer the shortest waiting time right now. My favorite, use this tech at the house. It can help enhance residential security, help more quickly locate wandering pets or wild visitors, know when deliveries get made and when they're picked up, especially if they're picked up when nobody's home. Add some AI to the video element and it can recognize logos and license plates on everything, all the vehicles, and that makes it a lot easier to identify deliveries and every other kind of visitor even after they leave. Next time, another wild card for me. It's right before Valentine's Day and President's Day, so that might lead me somewhere. I'm getting in some very cool products that might trigger a rundown. I still want to chase down that clever LED fixture idea. Well, we'll see. Drop Hank a line if you have any special requests.
Thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. The computer clubs have random access sessions at each of these club meetings. If you have any questions or need for technical advice, the club members are more than happy to assist. There is no such thing as a dumb question. All these computer club meetings are open free to the public. The Westchester PC Users Group has a presentation on how to smartify your home. Thursday, February the 6th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and they meet at the Keller Williams New York Realty, located at 120 Bloomingdale Road in White Plains, New York. Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey, that's the ACGNJ, they have their general meeting on Friday, February the 7th. Meeting time is 8 p.m., and they meet at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. The Kingsbite Computer Club will meet on Tuesday, February the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and their topic of presentation is computers, cell phone, and related subjects. They meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn, New York. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, February the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at NYU 32 Waverly Place, and they meet in the Silver Building. Check at the guard's desk for the room number, and NYU is located in Manhattan, New York. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, February the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and that's Valentine's Day. They meet at the Old Westbury campus at the New York Institute of Technology, Harry J. Scherr Hall, out in Westbury, New York. The Princeton PC Users Group meet Tuesday, February the 25th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and they meet at the Mercer County Library, Lawrenceville, New Jersey. The Brookdale Computer Users Group has a presentation on current trends in personal technology. Thursday, February the 27th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m., and they meet at the Middletown Library Large Meeting Room at 55 New Monmouth Road in Middletown, New Jersey. The 45th Trenton Computer Festival, Saturday, March the 21st. The College of New Jersey, Ewing, New Jersey. The original Personal Computer Festival is from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The keynote speaker will be Jerry Foster, CTO and co-founder of Plex Systems. The topic of presentation is How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Artificial Intelligence. It's an overview of artificial intelligence from its humble beginnings to disruptive force with an eye towards a significant positive impact on our world. And there are other feature tech talks and workshops, which includes Do-It-Yourself Home Automation, Tricks and Tips for Windows 10, Quantum Computing, WordPress Bootcamp, New Internet of Things Using 5G, Stock Market Trading Using Neural Networks, Hands-on Arduino Workshop for Beginners, All-Day Robotics Pavilion, and many more. For more information, tcf-nj.org. That's the 45th Trenton Computer Festival, Saturday, March the 21st of this year. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm, on the Internet, and pcradioshow.org. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. There is no such thing as a stupid question. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, Benjamin Rockwell, and Mark Leoso, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.